listening to Believe It, the life story of me, Richard Wilson. Today I'm going to tell you about the life story of my life story, my celebrity autobiography. It all started, as does so much of my life, with my old pal Ian McKellen, known in my social circle as Head of Gay. Ian and I often go to Charms, a Mayfair health club, for a side-by-side body scrub administered by our lovely Kenneth.
And they offered me this huge advance to write my celography.
What's a celography?
Well, it's short for celebrity autobiography.
Right. How much exactly?
I'd rather not say.
Ballpark?
Do you know, I've never understood that term. What's the ballpark to which it alludes? And why?
Never mind that. How much?
Kenneth?
Yes, sir?
What does ballpark actually mean?
I don't know, sir.
Can you not even give us a ballpark definition of ballpark?
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
You're not going to tell me, are you?
No. So, they offered me this huge ballpark to write my celography, and I took it, I mean, as you would.
As you did.
Indeed, and I set aside 9 months to write it. But I couldn't.
Why not?
It was too painful. I don't want to go back into my life and imagine things I haven't understood thus far. Do you know what I mean?
Not really, Ian, no.
Put it this way, I'd rather live in the moment. Oh, this moment. With Kenneth pummeling my gluteus maximus. My gluteus medius. My gluteus minimus.
Am I being too hard, sir?
No, my dear fellow. Be hard as you like.
Okay for you, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, fine, thank you. What about all the money they gave you?
Can I ask you something, Kenneth?
Yeah?
How do you manage to scrub Richard and me at the same time? I mean, that's four buttocks.
Strong wrists, two brushes.
Ah. Well, it's virtuoso stuff, like conducting two orchestras, boxing two men, writing Hamlet and King Lear simultaneously on parallel pieces of paper with a left hand and a right hand quill.
Ta.
I gave it back.
You didn't.
Every penny. I shall not be writing the story of my life. My past can go hang.
Right. That's that done then, gentlemen.
Oh, so what now, Kenneth?
Turn over.
Can't wait.
So, Ian had returned his entire ballpark. It was floating about in the publishing ether, destined to land on someone. Someone like Ian, perhaps. An actor, an elderly gay actor with a Scottish-sounding name. I let it be known I was in the market for my celography. You will now hear a voicemail from Camilla Harris, editorial director of Fisher Collins.
Richard, it's Camilla. Exciting news, we're publishing in December. Christmas is the time for celographies. Hooray!
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what
Camilla didn't give me a ballpark. It was more of a squash court. But I was delighted. It was a serious amount of wad, enough to make me feel wanted. Money does make you feel wanted, doesn't it? All I had to do now was write it. No, I couldn't. You should never do anything just for money. That's wrong.
Camilla, is Richard Wilson?
Richard!
I can't write the book.
Why not?
I'm just doing it for money. That's not good enough.
No, you're doing it because you want to tell the truth about your life. Your childhood, your struggles, your love life, your career. All the famous people you've met.
Childhood? I can't remember what I had for lunch last Friday.
You had hake.
Did I?
Yeah, I took you to Quo Vadis. I had Moonjack, so that's that sorted.
Okay, fine.
With respect, Richard, you're over 80. You'll never get another chance to tell the truth about yourself.
You're right, of course you are. But do I want to tell the truth about myself? I don't know.
Okay, listen, this is highly unprofessional, but I'm going to up your advance by 20,000 right here, right now.
I say I don't want to do it just for the money, so you offer me more. I'm not happy about this.
30,000.
You're not listening to me.
35.
Okay, done.
She was right, of course. The chance to tell the truth about myself and earn a tennis court of money.
Money, get away.
So, where to begin? Of course, with the title. I went into bookshops, searching for ideas, reciting my thoughts into my trusty phone. Okay, I'm in Waterstones, Piccadilly, and the first silography I picked up is David Beckham's. David's is called My Side. Works on two levels, doesn't it? My Side, as in Manchester United, and My Side, as in My Side of the Story. Jolly good. Not just a pretty face. Next up is Strictly Anne by Anne Widdicombe. Do you see? She was on Strictly and her name is Anne. So that's one level, but it's strictly about her, isn't it? That's the other level. And she comes across as very strict. Three levels. That's one to beat. Gloria Hunniford, My Life. Only one level, but very effective. Unfortunately, I can't use it, as it's not my name. I decided to consult a doctor. A Doctor Who. I know two, you know, Dr. David Tennant and Dr. Peter Capaldi. I really go to them for advice, medical and otherwise. They are young. Well, they are to me. But they've got wisdom beyond their years. If I could just find the right title, I could start the book.
Don't worry, we'll hear that ting.
What ting's that?
When you come across the right title for something, a bell goes off in your head, doesn't it? Got it. No feet in the grave.
No ting from me.
Yeah. 6 feet from the grave? See, because that's like 6 feet under, only better because it says you're still alive. Hmm? Eh? Do I hear a ter? Do I hear an ing?
I've got a good title for yours. I Am Who is a play on Who Am I?
Yeah, I'm not writing my silography. I have no desire to tell the truth about myself.
How about we write a joint one?
I don't understand. How do you write a joint life story?
Anton Deck did it. I found it in W.A. Smith and Hull. It's called Oh, What a Lovely Pair. That works on two levels, minimum.
OK, you know what I think? I think you're spending ages looking for a title to put off writing the book.
Well, you're the doctor.
So let's crack the title in the next minute, and then you just start writing, OK?
OK.
So what do the publishers want from the book?
Hold on. I've written it down. Truth, childhood, famous people, love, life, struggle.
My struggle. Too bold?
Well, I did have a struggle, and I am too bold.
That's too downbeat, isn't it? Well, how about, I had a struggle, but I emerged victorious. That's too long-winded.
Say that again?
I had a struggle, but I emerged victorious.
Victorious? Like Victor Meldrew.
Ting!
Ting!
Double ting!
Thank you, Doctor. I'll see myself out. I was on my way. I started at the beginning, and I wrote and wrote, and then, at the end of my first day, I popped over and read what I'd written to Dr. Capaldi. I was born in 1936, the same year as Pope Francis and Francis Shand Kidd, the mother of Princess Diana. To be accurate, I was...
Whoa. That's how you're starting the story of your life.
Well, the publishers want famous names.
Well, they don't have long to wait.
To be accurate, I was born on the 9th of July at 20 to 11 at night. My mother...
Sorry, can I stop you again? What's with the 20 to 11?
Well, it's true. They want famous names and truth.
Okay, but the truth is I'm wearing blue underpants.
I scribbled furiously all night, then fell asleep at my desk. I actually woke up with a post-it note stuck to my forehead. This was the first thing I found from my night's writing. Bleach, cauliflower, potatoes. The smells of my childhood. Bleach, cauliflower, potatoes. Prosecco? No, it was my waitress shopping list.
Well, I've read the first chapter and I'm so excited.
I hoped you would be.
I love the way you crowbar Diana into everything.
Well, it's hard work, but you asked for famous names.
I did, and I got a real sense of your struggle with the mangle and the carrot marmalade.
When I first had marmalade made from oranges, I thought it had gone off.
Mr. Pritchard, voice teacher, great character.
Well, it's all true.
So he was cruel then, Mr. Pritchard?
He was certainly very demanding.
And he's long dead, no doubt.
No doubt.
Okay, I'm going to ask you something now, Richard, and I want you to think carefully about your answer.
Right.
Because it could make the difference between shifting thousands of copies and shifting hundreds of thousands. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Did Mr. Pritchard abuse you?
All the time, in front of everyone. Richard, your voice is ridiculous. Your accent's bizarre. I've never heard abuse like it.
You know what I mean.
I'm not sure I do.
We have paid you a lot of money for the truth. A lot.
Well, I've given you the truth, Camilla.
You've given me boring truth. The truth is, I'm wearing blue knickers. So what?
Oh, God. Not you too.
I don't want carrot marmalade. I want chili marmalade. Marmalade vindaloo. You with me?
Is it a metaphor?
Give me hot.
But I've led a blameless life, Camilla.
Then we don't have a book.
I went into action. I ordered an Indian takeaway and got the doctors round to help me spice up my life.
Who wants prawn jalfrezi, lamb vindaloo?
No chicken korma.
Yeah, it's all hot.
Am I allowed a glass of water?
If it's hot.
Have a beer. It'll loosen your tongue.
Ta.
So, come on then. They want red-hot revelations. What am I going to do?
We know you like whiskey. Have you ever taken drugs?
I once took 5 paracetamol in a 24-hour period.
I warned you, didn't I? I said your truth wasn't exciting enough.
Well, you're right. We're going to have to make it up.
Oh, it's we know, is it?
They want you to dish the dirt about famous people you've slept with. Does that sum it up?
It does, but I haven't actually slept with any.
OK, well, if we're going to make it up, they're going to have to be dead, aren't they? Because the dead don't sue.
Ah, good point.
Would you pass the chilli pickle, Peter?
Let's brainstorm, then. Famous dead men.
Oh, dear, there's quite a lot of those.
Oh, God, that's hot. Oh, OK. Oh, God. OK, I'll start. Edward Heath.
I slept with Ted Heath. I must have been desperate.
That's a good call, because his private life was always a bit of a mystery.
And now we've solved it. Richard and Ted. Who'd have thought it?
I'm not having an affair with a Tory Prime Minister.
It's only pretend.
You don't even have to kiss him.
I'm not sleeping with any Tories. Not even Michael Heseltine.
Ah, that's interesting. So you fancy Heza?
Not his policies, just his hair. I like a man with nice hair. I'm happy to sleep with a Labour Prime Minister.
OK, we're getting somewhere. Dead Labour Prime Minister with nice hair. Oh, good. Even a cucumber writer's hot.
I told them to put chilli in it.
Hot writer. That's Richard right there.
Well, who was the Labour Prime Minister before Blair?
Callaghan.
Dead?
Yes, but too avuncular to be sexy. They call him Uncle Jim.
Before him?
Harold Wilson.
Did he have nice hair?
It was okay, but he smoked a pipe. So it's out of the question. The smell of pipe tobacco on a pillow. Ugh. And these men died a while ago. Don't we need someone more recent?
Just out of interest, were Callaghan and Wilson gay?
No.
He has to be gay, surely.
More beers. Come on, you've earned it.
Ta.
David?
Okay, I'm not sure I have earned it.
There you go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's be really bold. Let's make my imaginary lover alive.
He'll sue.
Not necessarily. Let's make him alive with nice hair and straight.
I'm confused.
Exactly. So is he. He's a living celebrity with nice hair who only realised he was gay when he had an affair with me.
Wow, that's good. That could be front page.
Exactly. Gay man has affair with gay man. No one wants to read about that.
OK, alive, nice hair, not Tory, famous, won't sue, doesn't smoke a pipe.
That's right. David.
No.
I think that's a no, Richard.
I'm a married man.
So was Oscar Wilde.
Whose side are you on?
I'm on the side of truth, David. And the truth is, you and Richard had an imaginary affair. How long did it go on?
I haven't made that up yet. But it was years.
I'm definitely buying the book now. That's my Christmas present sorted.
Why me?
It's the hair, isn't it? It's even better than Heseltine's.
You do have nice hair, David.
No, I bloody don't.
Yes, you do. It's so glossy. Mine's more like a hedge.
I'm saying no, and that's final.
Actually, I like your hair, Peter.
No, you don't.
Not so smug now, are we?
I can imagine running my hand through your hedge.
Well, don't.
No, you're right. I can't have an imaginary affair with one of you and not the other. That wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, I didn't say that a moment ago when you were all over me.
What am I going to do?
You're going to find a living, non-smoking, non-Tory celebrity with nice hair who's actually gay.
And won't sue. So he better be a friend, I'd say.
Ting!
Ting!
Are the nans ready to come out of the oven?
He's perfect.
He is, and he's a national treasure. People will love it.
He's the gay David Attenborough, isn't he?
You're not talking about who I think you're talking about, are you?
We so are.
Head of gay.
Head of gay.
The gay David Attenborough. I'm honoured.
Will you do it?
My dear man, of course.
Thank you. This means so much to me, not just financially, but mostly financially.
I understand.
I'm sorry it's such an unusual request.
It's not unusual, darling. It's unprecedented. In my long sexual career, the career implies ambition and strategy which would play no part in a love life. In 50s, 60s, or more, no man has ever said to me, will you be my imaginary lover? I mean, normally nothing is left to the imagination.
Indeed.
Congratulations, you've cracked the problem of autobiography, which is more than I did.
What problem is that?
It's how much can I remember, followed by, is what I remember the truth? Well, you don't remember anything of our affair on account of its non-existence. So, it's not a question of remembering the truth.
It's a case of manufacturing it.
Exactly. And making it believable. You are concocting believable lies that have the quality of truth. Is that not the essence of drama? What do you think, Kenneth?
Yeah.
I trust we can rely on your discretion, Kenneth.
You know, what happens in the steam room stays in the steam room.
Excellent. Scrub on, scrub on.
Yeah, well.
So, when can I see the pages?
You want to approve them?
It's your book, your truth. I'd just like to be consulted.
I will show you as soon as I've written them.
Love you.
Love you too, sir. Oh, sorry, you didn't mean me. Sorry, sir, that was unprofessional.
No, no. I enjoyed it.
The first time ever I saw
When did I first see Ian? What was it about him that I fell in love with? I sat at my desk, googling images of the young Ian McKellen, and you know, I almost fell in imaginary love with him. For real. I mean, the hair. So glossy, so luxuriant. The young Ian was like a cross between Rock Hudson and you-know-who. He was Rock Heseltine. I wrote quickly and without inhibition. Now I was getting somewhere, and in the morning I invited him round to my flat to hear what I had written.
Sit down, sit down.
Well, I can't. I'm nervous.
Why?
I think the doorman of your flat saw me. Well, I know he did.
And?
I'm worried he thinks we're having an affair. It has to be secret, doesn't it? Till the book comes out.
Our affair is over, Ian.
It is? Oh, how did it end?
Well, I haven't written that yet.
Oh, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm getting ahead of ourselves, I should say. So, well, how did it start?
If you sit down, I'll tell you.
Fine.
Chapter 7. First time ever I saw his face.
Is that my face?
It is.
Oh, that is so romantic. And you're looking adorable today, Richard, by the way. Oh, the sunlight on your bald pate is utterly fetching.
You don't have to say that.
I do. It's exactly what I'd say to an ex-lover to remind him and me of our former tendresse.
Oh, my God, Ian, you're so seductive.
Well, you should know.
It was the summer of 73 that I first saw him on stage. In his element, he was captivating. Quixotic.
Quixotic. Oh, what a lovely word.
It is, isn't it? Not sure what it means, mind. We proceed. He had a strong jawline, brooding, intense eyes. Mm. But there was about him an aura of mischief.
Aha.
In short, He was one of the most beautiful men I'd ever seen.
Oh, Richard, you can't have seen many.
But his nose did make me smile.
Oh, that's lovely. What nose was that, then?
Eh?
What was it in?
It was in your face, Ian.
No, you misunderstand me, presumably for comic effect. For what part was I wearing this nose?
You weren't wearing your nose for a party, Ian. I'm talking about your nose.
Oh, I see. So, in our imaginary love affair, my real nose made you smile.
That's right. I went backstage and introduced myself. An hour later, we were in my flat, nude.
My God, we didn't hang about, did we?
I remember that the Carpenters' song, Yesterday Once More, was playing on the radio as Ian took off my vest.
Oh, my goodness, I think I need a glass of water.
Do you like the details?
Absolutely. The truth is in the details. I believe every word.
Thank you.
Well, do go on. What happened next?
And go on I did. On and on. I felt elated. This was Jingle Bells. This was Ballpark. This was Sunday Times bestseller. Russell Brand sold 600,000 copies of his xylography, My Bookie Wook, and that was a tale of relentless vest removal. I carried on making up the truth till I reached the fateful year of 1990. When Ian and I said goodbye to love.
My God, we had an affair for 17 years.
I know.
And we managed to keep it a secret from everybody for all that time.
We did. Our families didn't know, our friends didn't know, the press didn't know.
I didn't know.
No, Kenneth didn't know. And in a very real sense, we didn't know.
True.
So, how did it end?
I'll read it to you. Can you pass me the manuscript, Kenneth?
Will do.
So, chapter 11, Goodbye to Love. In 1990, I was offered the part of Victor Meldrew in a new sitcom called One Foot in the Grave. Initially, I turned it down. I was in my early 50s, and I thought I was too young to play the part. Ian agreed.
Did I? Interesting.
But then I changed my mind. The script was just too good. So I told Ian I was going to do it after all. Don't, he said. You're a stage actor. That's where you belong. What's more, it'll never be a hit.
I said that?
You did. It was the beginning of the end of our relationship. Ian, who had never had a hit in a TV sitcom...
I had never been in a TV sitcom.
Quite. Ian, who had never had a hit in a TV sitcom, became increasingly discombobulated by my burgeoning fame. He also became increasingly bored with me sexually.
That's a lie.
I noticed that when we travelled on the tube, his eyes would dart around, drinking in all the young men.
Oh, this is tosh. I was drinking in the adverts.
One night, catching sight of my flabby tummy as I emerged from the shower, he uttered those fateful two words. It's over. He was bored of me.
That's an utter travesty of what happened.
What happened then?
You got bored of me. If you're going to tell lies about me, at least make them true. This idea that I'm some promiscuous adulterer.
What about it?
I mean, did it ever occur to you that I needed all those men on the tube?
Ah, so you admit it.
Now, let me finish. I needed them because your refusal to engage with me fully left a void in me, which only mindless sex could fill.
So it was my fault that you were unfaithful.
Let's calm down, please. Let's look at the facts, fake as they are.
What are the fake facts?
We loved each other and we looked after each other and then we drifted apart.
Don't give me that, we drifted apart. I'm writing a book here. This has to be drama, and drama means conflict.
Oh, does it really? Do you know, I do know what drama means. Do you know, I am a well-known actor.
Sorry, I forgot.
I'm withdrawing my permission.
You can't. I have to send the manuscript in on Friday.
I will not let you traduce me.
Please. We can resolve this. Let's find a mediator.
Who do you suggest?
I'm here if you need me, gentlemen.
Oh, my dear man, of course.
Kenneth will do the right thing.
He will. Can I ask you something first, Kenneth?
Yeah?
I assume you bat on our side, as it were.
Well, to be honest, I bat for any side that'll have me, sir. I mean, I just love batting.
Well, now, Kenneth, whose side are you on? There will be no recriminations either way.
Well, this is a health club. I'm about health, physical and mental.
So?
Well, it's bad for your health, writing those books. You're telling strangers your business. Keep it to yourself. It's all just cashing in on celebrity, isn't it?
So true. But I love cashing in. You get cash.
I couldn't agree more, Kenneth. I took cash to write my celography, but I gave it back because memory is false, truth is elusive, and privacy is priceless.
Nice one.
That's easy for you to say. You can afford to give money back.
You see how envious he is, Kenneth? That's why we broke up. He says I was put out by his victim, Meldrew. You should have heard him on my knighthood.
How many more times? I never wanted a knighthood, only wanted to be offered one so I could turn it down.
Oh, God. It's the publisher. What do I say?
Oh, tell her your master says you can't do it for health reasons.
I'll tell her later. I'm in pain. All that money gone.
Kenneth will scrub away the pain.
I'll do my best.
That's excellent. I feel needed. That's needed with a K.
You got away with words, sir.
He gets away with everything.
Oh, I've scrubbed them all, you know. Lucian Freud. I met him when I was still a boxer.
You were a boxer?
Yeah, when I came out of the army. Oh, I could tell you some stories about Lucian, all right. Because they're dead a fair game, aren't they?
Yes, they are. You free later this evening? What say you and I have a drink?
Sounds good.
Don't do it, Kenneth. He'll dump you like he dumped me.
I belong to a drinking club in Whitechapel.
You watch him on the tube. He's unstoppable.
Well, that sounds delightful, Kenneth.
Okie dokie.
I don't suppose there's any chance of an imaginary threesome.
No.
Thought not. Story of my life.
So read my mind up, I must live my life alone.
You've been listening to Believe It. I was joined by my very good friends, Peter Capaldi, Sir Ian McKellen, and David Tennant. I was also delighted to work with Rebecca Statton, who played Camille, and John Hollingworth, who played Kenneth. Of course, I played myself. The script was written by the irrepressible John Cantor, and the programme was produced and directed by Clive Brill. It was a Brill production for BBC Radio 4.
And you can catch up with more.